Good morning and welcome to Radio Gorgeous. Radio Gorgeous is proud and pleased as punch to welcome Plum Sykes to Radio Gorgeous. Welcome, Plum.
Thank you very much. Very happy to be here.
Excellent. Thank you. On the occasion of your third novel,
yes,
Party Girls Die in Pearls.
Yeah.
I was going to wear my pearls today. You don't wear your pearls.
I know.
We're pearls.
No, because it's a working day, isn't it? So we haven't got our pearls
exactly
on.
Exactly. But for our party girls, every day is a working day. Every day is a day for pearls. Tell me about your first in a series.
Yes.
Of Oxford Girl Mysteries.
Yes. So this book is a sort of comic murder mystery. And one description of it is it's sort of Clueless meets Agatha Christie, which I love that description. And it's about two freshers who start at Oxford. One's an English kind of country girl and the other's a very glitzy kind of New York girl. And they go to Oxford expecting kind of books and ball gowns. And within about 2 days, they've discovered a body on the chaise longue and they're thrown into this murder investigation. But in order to solve the murder, of course, because it's my book, they have to go to lots of parties and wear lots of clothes in the process. So it's a combination of all the comic, fashion-y stuff that I do with this really fun murder mystery story.
Excellent. And you use the word freshers. Because one of the funnest aspects of the book are your annotations.
Oh, yes, the footnotes, yeah.
Yes. So, yeah. You know, which gives us, you know, insights into the weird, wacky, wonderful world of ancient Oxford.
Yeah.
And its, you know, pecuniary traditions, as well as, you know, insights to 80s TV shows of, like Dallas.
Like Dallas, exactly.
Exactly. Tell me, okay, so the world of Oxford that reproduce here is, I would say, your heroine Ursula Flowerbutton is half Morse, half Marple.
Yeah, you know? And a bit of Nancy Drew.
Yes,
thrown
exactly
in as well.
Exactly. Yeah. Which we have our Nancy Drew and her sidekick,
exactly,
in her Watson Nancy.
Yeah.
That was the same time that you spent in Oxford, but so you know, obviously familiar or whatever. But what did setting it at that time allow you to do as well as a novelist?
So,
because there's no cell phones. There's, you know.
Well, I wanted to set it in the 80s for two reasons. One, because I was at Oxford in the 80s. Well, I was at the tail end when it was kind of tailing off. But I did think it was a very funny time to write about because of the kind of obsession with Sloane Rangers and being posh and all of that. I also wanted to set it actually a bit earlier than when I went, so that the clothing really was kind of super, super kind of Ivana Trump. And also because I didn't want mobile phones, I didn't want DNA testing, I didn't want lots of computers. I wanted it to be set in a time when you still had to solve a case by using your brain, logic, putting clues together. I just think that's a more fun read for people. I mean, I do love, obviously, you know, contemporary crime stuff, and I love things like CSI and all of that, but I didn't feel that I wanted to write like a procedural crime story. I wanted to write a comedy crime caper, and I thought the most recent time I can still do that is the 80s. The reason being that DNA testing didn't really come in until the early 90s and kind of around the time of the OJ trial, when it was that was only the beginning of it. But I thought, make it a bit earlier and we don't have to deal with that.
Exactly. Well, and it's also, I mean, as you say, in terms of crime solving and as a reader, it's similar to like going to Nigella and Jamie to cook food that you can actually produce in your kitchen as opposed to Heston Blumenthal, which, you know, you need science.
Exactly. It's the Nigella crime caper.
Exactly. And tell me about your lovely heroine, and I will pronounce it in the English way, Ursula.
So Ursula is a sort of very English, kind of good, slightly frumpy, sweet kind of country girl who has a bit of a Cinderella journey. You know, she starts off in her kind of frumpy kilts and beret and all of that. And as the story goes on, she sort of borrows lots and lots of clothes from Nancy, who's a little bit her fairy godmother, you know. And so we do see her evolving, and she evolves as a person, and she figures out this crime. But she's just a really, really lovable character for the readers to kind of get their teeth into. And in a way, the Nancy character is absolutely the opposite. She's brash, she's funny, she's outrageous, she has the most amazing clothes, she's trendy. So they're opposites, but they're best friends.
And yeah, I sort of described her as an unselfconscious, until she gets to Oxford, undiscovered brainy beauty.
Who, the Ursula character?
Yes, yeah.
Yes, exactly. She doesn't realise that she's so attractive and gorgeous. She's just quite modest, and which is very English. It's very true to an English teenage girl, actually.
Yeah, and endearing and eager and jolly hockey sticks.
Yes, exactly. They're not sort of vain and obsessed with how they look and all of that kind of thing.
And I know that you're... first daughter is also named Ursula.
Was that
conscious or unselfconscious?
It was. And now my second daughter, Tess, says that she's got to be in the next
book.
Well, I
was going to ask, will Ursula stay?
Ursula will stay. Okay. Ursula and Nancy will stay throughout, and we'll see more of their journey, their kind of personal development and things as the book's gone. But each time they'll have a different mystery to solve or a different crime to get involved with, you know.
Fantastic. I'm so pleased that they're staying.
Yeah.
And I can't wait to meet Tess. I hope you don't kill her off.
I can't kill off someone named after my daughter.
No, that would be wrong. Okay, so tell me about the other characters
the other characters are these kind of funny kind of Oxford archetypes. So there's the kind of, and a lot of them are based on, you know, the characters that I met when I was at Oxford. So there's the sort of very overly proper German princeling called Otto, who's an incredibly funny character to read about. There's the kind of witty gay, who is called Horatio, and he writes the newspaper gossip column. And he's sharp-tongued, but he's, you know, a good person. But he's always out for a story. Then there's the dishy Don, of course. And there's the sort of crusty old Dons as well. There's a very fun character who's a very, very uptight librarian who wears lots of Laura Ashley, and there's some scenes in the book with her which are really, really good fun. So it's a real mix of characters, and I think the readers are just, they're just enjoying it so much.
Mm-hmm. Yes. And it does have, as you were talking about Nancy, who's, you know, complete fashionista. I mean, I went to school with people, especially New York based, and just with every designer, pouring out of their closets, you know,
which would never have happened in England at that time, by the way.
Yeah,
never.
Which is you know, quite fun. And you have a fashion background.
I do.
And so some of the characters, it did seem to me, you know, like Horatio and some of the other characters, sort of seem from the fashion pages.
Yeah.
Well, how does that feed you?
I do a lot of, obviously I do a lot of fashion reporting for American Vogue, so I'm always very conscious of what everyone's wearing. And I've always found in my fashion journalism that clothes really tell you a lot about a person, and they really, in a very, very few words, can sort of explain what someone's like. So, sorry, my voice is going. So the fact that Horatio is often seen in a lilac jalaba, I think tells you that he is a sort of witty, louche, dilettante kind of guy. And the fact that we see Nancy in kind of, you know, yellow taffeta ball gowns tells us a lot about her frivolous, fun nature. And I also used the fashion to set the time, because I think that, you know, if you say, here's this girl wearing a kind of lilac sparkling boob tube with, you know, metallic blue mascara and bright red lips, you know it's the 80s, you know. So I didn't have to keep referring to the 1980s. I just said, rara skirt or high top sneakers.
Tell me, I do want to get to, as we're talking about fashion, Alexander McQueen.
Yeah.
And obviously fan, etc. And tell me your experience of his genius in passing.
Well, I met him when he was about 23 and I was about 23. We were exactly the same age. And he was just starting as a designer and I was just starting at British Vogue as a kind of assistant closet girl. And I was working for Isabella Blow. And, you know, it was just, it was really fun to meet people like that. I mean, I met a lot of designers at the time, like Hussein Chalayan and Bella Freud and, you know, all sorts of people who were starting off. But he was kind of the one, capital T, capital O, who eclipsed all of them, I suppose. And he really was a genius. He really was a genius. He was a sculptor in clothing, I think.
And what was that time like for you? Because, okay, so I think possibly your personality is a little bit closer to Ursula's.
Oh, yes, definitely.
Yes. And grounded and etc. But Isabella Blow, I mean...
Well, it was funny because when
on a day-to-day basis with those two.
Well, when I said to her I wanted to be her assistant, she said to me, why would someone as conservative as you want to work for someone as eccentric as me? And it was actually because she was really eccentric and because I was really boring. So I think it was just, I was always drawn to those characters. And I knew I could have fun working with Izzy, and I did have a lot of fun. But it was also a real education because she introduced me to these amazing makeup artists, designers, hairdressers. I got to see everyone in fashion in a really nice way, not just as a, you know, she was friends with a lot of people, and it was just a great entree for me to work for someone like that.
But I think of people like that with huge personalities, creativities, where do you draw the line in terms of boundaries? And was that a difficult...
What, as in, are they your friend or not?
No, as in, you know, all hours, all times, because I've worked for interior designers.
Well, actually, funnily enough, people in fashion are very professional because they wouldn't be able to survive if they were doing, you know, if they didn't have any boundaries because it's such an extreme business. I mean, you in fashion, you do have to go to parties in the evening to report on them as part of your job. But you wouldn't do that every night, and you certainly wouldn't do an interview, you know, at a sort of odd time. I mean, I remember once when I interviewed Puff Daddy at the Paris Couture, and I quite liked doing the interviews in the daytime. And I got a call from his hotel at about 11 o'clock one night saying, do you want to come over and carry on the interview now? And I said, no, I don't. I'm in bed. And that was the end of that. So it's not very... I kind of like my sleep, so it's not very difficult for me to... stop that. But also Alexander, you know, he wasn't someone who rang him up in the middle of the night. Not at all.
I found with creative people, like, it doesn't stop, and that's a sort of ceaseless process.
It doesn't stop for them.
Yeah.
It doesn't stop for
them. And you didn't, that, I mean, that's a wonderful working experience, that you can be of it but not be overly drawn into it.
No, because again, I was too sensible.
Exactly.
Too boring.
Fantastic. Grounded. Yeah. Feet on the ground. Yeah. Just like,
I mean, they all went off and did lots of partying and things, but I just didn't sort of, you know, I was just there to report on it. I didn't, you know, I was friends with those people, but I didn't feel that it was my whole life.
Yeah, drawn into that. So you had, so you, like Ursula, had, you know, the sensible grannies
in your background. I did. Well, I had one, I did have a plain granny and a vain granny, although plain granny wasn't that plain. I had a very, very lovely granny called Madeline Goad, who was very much part of my childhood, and then a very beautiful granny who wasn't around much called Camilla. And I did use those as inspiration in the book, because I do think grannies are such an important influence, you know, in your life.
Well, because as a parent yourself, you can, you know, understand that you have to be the parent. You are not a friend. You are, you know, you are the discipliner. You are the leader. You are the feeder.
Exactly.
You are the nurturer, but not friend. Whereas grannies...
Yeah, best friend.
Yes.
Yeah.
And bypass. I mean, I used to spend, you know, spend all-nighters with my grandmother.
Right.
You know, and
oh,
she
that's
was...
So sweet.
Yeah. Yeah, it was absolutely lovely.
Yeah.
Plum.
Yes.
Thank you for coming
you're so
on to
welcome.
Radio Gorgeous.
Thank you. It was really fun.
I can't wait. Do you have a title for the next one? So
I don't yet, I'm afraid.
Okay.
Even if I did, I probably wouldn't say.
Excellent. Well, I appreciate your honesty. Excellent. Hopefully we'll meet you again when the next one comes out.
Oh, thank you.
Thank
you
very much.
Oh, you're so brilliant, Donna.